This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Our first guest did not attend school to learn reading or writing until age 13. Now he has a warning from the past, published in the top scientific journal in the world. Stay tuned for the full story. Buried in the ocean floor is a climate trap. Huge volumes of the super-warming gas methane are frozen inside cages of ice. They are called clathrates. If that methane thaws and gets into the atmosphere, it's possible a major civilization-ending warming could result. Some respected scientists doubt that could happen this century or even this millennium, but new science suggests a past release happened in a warming similar to today. The new paper was published August 22nd in the Proceedings of the National Academy. The title is Evidence for Massive Methane Hydrate Destabilization During the Penultimate Interglacial Warming. We have reached the lead author. Dr. Saeed Waldiab is Associate Professor of Paleoclimatology at the University of California. From California, Saeed Waldiab, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, Alex. Thank you very much.
Well, your paper got a lot of coverage. Let's start here. To understand this ancient methane warming, we need to set the stage. Tell us about what the climate was like around 125,000 years ago.
The climate around that time, the Eemian, so basically the peak Eemian warming, it was warmer between 1 and 2 degrees as compared to today. The sea level was higher between 3 and 5 meters compared to today. So this is for us very interesting because it provides us basically a window into climatic processes that may be useful to understand the ongoing and future climate warming because there are something, you know, happening right now, but there are also climatic feedback processes that will come later, and by looking, going back in time in a similar condition where we are heading and learning this climate warming, climate feedback processes, it's crucial. So the choice of this time window was intentionally because it is, even though the cause for the warming at that time was different, but the climatic feedback processes, this is what we can learn from. So this gives us basically a paleo analog or paleo perspective, what we can learn from that time window for this ongoing climate warming. And this is probably a imperfect analog, but still it provides us valuable information about processes that can happen in a warming climate now or in 100 years.
And your paper suggests the key driver for this ancient warming event that may have melted the clathrates was a current of meltwater arriving from collapsing ice sheets somewhere. I looked it up. The southern polar ice sheet melted around 125,000 years ago. That was discovered by the glacial geologist Anders Carlson. But your team suggests a different source for the meltwater that appeared off the coast of Africa. Where did it come from?
First, we have to make clear that the warming driven by change in solar insolation was the key. And then that warming drove, basically, among others, the melting, on the southern hemisphere, what you mentioned, but also the melting of Greenland ice sheet, the Arctic. We have to be clear, the melting of Greenland ice sheet and the associated meltwater input into the North Atlantic is a response to the warming, right? It's part of it. And then we have this huge meltwater. Imagine meltwater from ice is zero salinity, right? It's low density. And if you put low density water into critical region of subpolar North Atlantic, you are basically perturbing the density-driven ocean circulation. So what we see is basically the warming-induced increased ice sheet melting in the north, increased meltwater into the North Atlantic, and this meltwater, low density, basically perturbed the ocean circulation at our site, which is the equator Atlantic, at water depths between 5 and 1,200 meters below surface, basically starts then this area from cold water. So the warming we observe in our region is basically a composite of two processes. If you warm the climate, heat basically diffuses from the atmosphere through the surface, one. And the other is if you perturb the ocean circulation, so basically in our case, the advection of cold water from the high latitude was basically dramatically reduced. Those two processes combined led then to exceptionally strong warming of intermediate water. This is basically waters at a depth between 500 and, say, for simplicity, 1,000 meters below the surface. So we have to make clear, basically, that the melting of the ocean and the meltwater input is part of the feedback processes that basically create further feedback processes or feedback loops.
So, Sai, most of the discussion of frozen methane on the seabed in recent years has pointed to the Arctic, especially on the bottom of the shallow East Siberian Sea. Why did you go to tropical West Africa to study clathrates?
Well, my large part of my study is on world focused on how monsoon system, right? The global monsoon system work, including the West African monsoon system. So I collected this core to get insight about the monsoon system. But when you have the material, unique material, valuable material, your research is not only constrained to this monsoon system, but you look also at other climatic processes, and you basically capitalize on this material you have. So there are a lot of people who look, and as you said, in the Arctic region, but what happened in the Arctic region is also felt in the equatorial Atlantic. So what we are looking is basically teleconnections, right? And for example, high latitude, the Arctic, is warming much, much stronger than the average global warming, right? So, and that has an effect of meltwater and other processes that find its way into tropical regions. So we are basically creating teleconnections and also feedback processes that communicate basically between the tropics and the northern high latitudes. We are interested in this larger picture. How are things connected? And then how is the climatic feedback loop basically amplifying and accelerating climatic processes that happen in the tropics, that happen in the northern high latitude?
That's a great story. You went to study the monsoons in Africa. You dug up the tiny sea creatures called foraminifers. And then expanded and said, well, what else can we tell from this, and looked into the methane. Now, some scientists who doubt the clathrate risk say methane would not escape the sea to reach the atmosphere, so the risk of warming from that methane would be minimal. What do you say to that?
I think science and the science community benefits greatly from healthy skepticism, right? So this skepticism push us then to work harder, to, you know, to expand our research, to strengthen our research. I think it's as a healthy discussion that pushes basically the science to the edge, and that is a good thing. But at the same time, we, as paleoclimatologists, we have to make sure that our colleagues, you know, paleoclimate is a niche where we, you know, where we use a method and techniques that are probably very specific. And what I see is part of our job is also to communicate with our colleagues who study current climate or future climate, to explain them our methods, our approach, our climate archive, how we decipher fingerprints of past climate change, and explain them, and that the current climate community or the modern climate community can benefit greatly by basically looking carefully at our findings and having, of course, this critical discussion. But we have also to work and explain our colleagues basically the robustness of our finding. This is how I see it.
And was there a corresponding global warming in that period 125,000 years ago when methane might have been released? That is, do we have evidence that a clathrate release led to a heating world then?
What we see here is at this time when we, in our study, see methane hydrate destabilization and methane release across the water column, a water column of 1,300 meters. So that has to be massive and also sustained over a long time period to be documented in across the water column. And we looked at the atmospheric CO2 and atmospheric methane as measured in the ice cores. Indeed, we see a slight increase of CO2, atmospheric CO2, and atmospheric methane. So basically coincident with the time we see this destabilization on the oceanic side, we see basically this an increase of methane, and atmospheric CO2. I have to add this increase can be caused by different processes. One contributing factor might be that what we documented. But this is an initial result, so we need to expand our study area, into different regions to show and to make clear that our finding is not limited to one site, like the Eastern Equatorial Atlantic, but to other sites. When you have, imagine, methane is a very potent greenhouse gas. When the methane makes its way into the atmosphere, it's going to basically contribute and accelerate and amplify the already existing warming. So getting it in the atmosphere, it is clearly going to have contributed to the warming. So this is basically where kind of demonstrate actually how a positive climatic feedback process works, right? You warm the climate. The warm climate causes the ice sheet to melt. You get an increased meltwater into the ocean. Meltwater is low density. And this low density perturbs the ocean circulation, creating, warming the intermediate water. And this warming of the intermediate water causes then the methane hydrate to get destabilized. And then it makes way back to the atmosphere. And then it basically contributes to warming. So once we get those methane and the CO2 to the atmosphere, it's going to contribute to the warming. So this is a classic climatic feedback process that can be learned only by looking at past. If we can use models, model projection, but this paleoclimate perspective is very, very crucial. And we have to communicate this clearly to the general community, but also to the research, to our colleagues that focus in current or future climate. So it's about communication. So,
Radio EcoShock.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is C. Waldiab, a scientist from the UC Santa Barbara Paleoclimate and Stable Isotope Lab. We're talking about evidence methane from the seabed could be released as the oceans warm, as it's happened in the past. So it's an amazing what you found, that the sea, according to the samples that you brought up, may have warmed over 6 degrees C hotter. Now, that's a huge warming, and it happened not at the sea surface, but fairly far down below. How long do you think the methane release from these clathrates might have lasted?
Just to clarify, the surface warming we observed, it was like just 1 degree or 1.5. So this extremely strong warming is observed in the intermediate water. So it's not that the atmosphere or the surface water was warmed by 6 degrees. Then the background, it is the intermediate water. And to answer your question about the duration, is we looked carefully how long was the fingerprint we reconstructed. peak is about 500. It was, so we see basically 500 years of mating release, mating oxidation across the water column. It starts, you know, if we look at the beginning to the end, it's about 1,000 years. But when we look at this peak, the maximum, it's about 500. And that means, basically, it's kind of important. If you have this kind of persistent, sustained destabilization, and that's why it's making across the water column and potentially to the atmosphere, and that is basically strongly contradictory to the ideas that exist, well, the flare is not, you know, it's short-term, it doesn't make the water calm. There are many, many arguments, but we provide here very strong case, very strong evidence that there is the possibility that strong warming, exceptionally strong warming on the intermediate water. And, I mean, you know, when you have this warming, it's just a physical reasoning, right? If the warming exceeds the stability field of methane hydrate, then methane hydrate is going to dissolve, right? And that's what we see. So I think we have basically to look at the records and at the strength of the evidence. The warming that you, what we are mentioning here, the warming of the intermediate water, we work carefully to check it, and we use several independent proxies. So what that means, proxies, is we cannot go back and measure the temperature of, you know, of the past, but we have chemical isotopic fingerprint with which we can reconstruct quantitatively temperatures or fingerprint of methane. So the evidence is relatively strong, but still, right, we are looking back in time. There are some degree of uncertainty in our approach, but we were carefully to kind of test and validate this using different approach. So the warming, this extremely strong warming, right, 6 degrees, 6.8 degrees more from the background, that happens not in the atmosphere, not in the surface, but into the intermediate water. And that is why we have to watch carefully how this region is basically evolving. Because if you look currently, the ice sheet melting, Greenland ice melting is really accelerating. So what that means is the rate of melting is accelerating. So it's getting more and more and more and more every year. And this meltwater is already noticed in some part of North Atlantic. We see the salinity is decreasing, and if you, you know, lower salinity means lower density. So we already seen processes that we saw in the past. You know, if we warm the climate, you increase the meltwater. The meltwater has to go somewhere into the ocean, in part in critical region, and this is going to lower the density. And we already, there is a strong debate, you know, whether the ocean circulation is weakening. There are indications, there are contraindications. So I think the process what we're showing in the past is very, very valuable to the discussion what we have, and also to the feedback processes we can encounter in the future.
See, tell us about your life journey to becoming a paleoclimatologist.
I tell this occasionally to my students because my path is not the usual one. I was born in Eritrea. This is in East Africa. And because at the time we have this war, independence war, my parents decided to basically send me to my grandparents in rural Africa. Rural Africa is different than rural America or rural Canada or rural Australia, right? So I was their shepherd and helping my grandparents with their, you know, they were pastoralists and had no opportunity to go to school and to read and write. So at 13, and my you know, the extended family decided I should go to Germany because the war was getting worse, and that's at the time when I've been in Germany, I started to read and write. So basically I started very, very, very late. But still, you can see that it's doable. It's never late, right? Never late. And I am here where I am.
From UC California, we've been speaking with Associate Professor C. Waldia. He is lead author of the new paper, Evidence for Massive Methane Hydrate Destabilization During the Penultimate Interglacial Warming. You can find it and read it for free in full text by searching that title, or you can use a link in my show blog at ecoshock.org.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.